From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we're talking about Port City United, specifically at the risk of swimming upstream, the good that PCU has done, alongside its notable challenges. Now, over the last couple of years, and especially the last couple of months, there has been a lot of ink spilled, including by me, over the issues at PCU, New Hanover County's Anti-Violence and Community Safety Department. And given how much PCU has been in the news, you've probably become quite familiar with it. But just in case, here's some important backstory. In the summer of 2021, there was a shooting at New Hanover High School that sent one student to the hospital and another, eventually, to prison. Now, there had been violence in schools before, and certainly in Wilmington's greater downtown area, where it has long impacted the city's black population. But after the New Hanover shooting, affluent and largely white residents who had kids at New Hanover High, and even some who didn't, pushed officials to take action in a way they just hadn't before. And, as I'll say later in this show, I am in no way denigrating residents for using their voice to push their elected representatives on any issue. But it is worth noting how quickly action was taken in this case. Within a week, then-chair of the county, Julia Olson-Bozeman, had pushed through a plan to tap into $350 million from the hospital sale to address community violence. Over the last several years, I've called this a moral panic. Not because it shouldn't have been addressed. Certainly, children shooting children is a critical issue. But because of how it was addressed, a massive amount of money and no plan. Now, to try and figure out some kind of plan, county officials spent 5 or 6 months meeting with many of the area's nonprofits and community organizations. But ultimately, the county chose to stand up its own department. Based on a recommendation from Judge Jay Corbening, a respected community leader in his own right who had long dealt with youth violence from the bench, the county adopted the Cure Violence model out of Chicago. Specifically, though, they took Durham's Bull City United as a template. A key element of the model was violence interrupters. In theory, these are community members who keep their ear to the ground and their eyes on social media and who have earned the respect to intervene in the cycle of violence before it turns lethal. To create this part of its new department, the county poached much of the staff from True Colors. That's the troubled for-profit brewery that had been running its own violence interrupter program. There was a hitch, though. Many of True Colors' employees were, by design, active gang members. Founder George Taylor had long argued that that gave them access and street cred that they needed to do the work. And Taylor was a passionate defender of gang membership, noting, correctly, that being in a gang is not in and of itself illegal, and arguing that the system that law enforcement uses to quote-unquote validate gang members is applied arbitrarily based on nebulous criteria. That's an argument I've made, and it's an argument that PCU's first department head Cedric Harrison would echo after he was hired. Still, publicly and privately, law enforcement, including Sheriff Ed McMahon and District Attorney Ben David, expressed concerns about the county's gambit. But PCU went ahead, launching in the spring of 2022 with the hope that it could thread the needle, taking all of the benefits of hiring gang members, namely young men who had leadership experience and deep social connections in the communities they were trying to help, while staving off the negatives, namely criminal activity, which the county said it would not tolerate. And over the next 2 years, based on many conversations I've had and the reporting we've done here at WHQR, PCU did some great work. Second chance expungement clinics, a 24-hour helpline that could help connect residents to resources they might not even know existed, and community resource workers providing support and mentorship in the schools. But the bad press outweighed the good. Less than a year in, the county fired Cedric Harrison, and in the months afterward, Commissioners Dane Scalise and Leanne Pierce raised questions about whether to continue funding PCU, especially the violence interrupters, who had been rebranded as mediation and outreach workers. The saving grace, at the time, was that the county had shifted from hospital sale money to COVID relief funding, but that ARPA money was a ticking clock. And this year, things got worse for PCU, with the arrest of Stephen Barnett, the supervisor of the mediation and outreach program. Barnett, it needs to be said, was fired almost immediately, although it will be some time before he gets his day in court. But admittedly, the optics were bad, Barnett is charged with driving a juvenile to Houston Moore and then helping him flee after that young man allegedly shot and paralyzed someone, all while on the clock in a county vehicle. Just over a month later, another PCU employee was arrested after buying drugs from a confidential informant. In court, Judge Corpening, who apparently through sheer happenstance was presiding that day, told the young man he had effectively ended PCU. And not that any more bad press was needed, but not long after that, Commissioner Scalise, who had already said he would not vote to fund PCU going forward, went on Nick Craig's morning show to claim he had been intimidated and verbally threatened by a PCU employee during a tense altercation after a county commission meeting. We'll have links on our show page to our reporting on that and to the episode of Craig's show, but the upshot is the employee was fired shortly afterward. And that brings us pretty much to now. And realistically, PCU is likely to be defunded and shuttered by the county. Commissioners Jonathan Barfield and Rob Zappel have defended at least parts of the program, but honestly, the writing is on the wall. All of that said, though, I still think it's important to have some conversation about where the department came from, what it was intended to do, what it did do, and what, in the future, the department or some other version of it might accomplish. To that end, we'll be talking with Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of LINC. Roberts reached out to me recently, noting that amid the bad press PCU was getting, very few people seemed eager to speak to the good that the department had been doing. But Roberts said he was more than happy to do that. So we sat down and talked through his role in PCU's formation and his thoughts on the program's past, present, and future. First, we also wanted to speak to Anthony Brum. He's the PCU employee who was fired after a tense conversation with Scalise. Brum, a former True Colors employee who came to the county early in PCU's formation, tells a very different version of the interaction, but he also shared some of his experience working for PCU. Anthony Brum, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So you're here today because you were involved in a conversation with Commissioner Dane Scalise that he is represented in the media as being an altercation. And just to start, I want to give you just the opportunity to just give your version of events. How did this happen from your point of view?
Okay. So from my point of view, first of all, ever since Commissioner Scalise has gotten the platform to speak, he's been very critical of Port City United, more specifically the mediation and outreach team, which is the team I was a part of. And every time he speaks about that team, he refers to us as gang members, felons, whatever else that goes along those lines. So, you know, it's very dehumanizing to hear yourself being talked about in that way all the time, especially when you come from a place where you may have made some mistakes, but you're really putting forth your best effort for years, been putting forth your best effort to change your life around and help make the community a better place for everybody. So, you know, it's a little frustrating, but, you know, it is what it is. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But, you know, I've been down at the Register of Deeds office on the fourth floor where Port City United is home, doing resumes, filling out applications, just trying to, you know, because I wasn't sure what the future of PCU was. So I just wanted to be prepared. So I was down there doing that, and I happened to take a walk around downtown. And I was on my way back, crossed paths with the commissioner. At the time, he was having a conversation with another, I'm not sure who she was, but he was having a conversation with someone. So I walked past, I didn't say anything, but as I was walking, I noticed that he was walking behind me. So at that point, I turned around and I introduced myself. I said, "Hey, I'm Anthony from PCU. I'm one of those gang members that you've been referring to in the media. And I'm just here to tell you, like, look, some of us may have made some mistakes in the past. Some of us may belong to organizations that are frowned upon by most of society, but that doesn't define us. That's not who we are. It's not all there is to us. And those things you're saying in the media have been very dehumanizing to us." As I was saying these things, he began to interrupt me and go on to say what he had to say, but I wasn't done speaking. So I asked him not to interrupt me. At that point, he became pretty hyperactive and began to tell me that he's not the one. He's not the one. At that point, I asked him, "What do you mean by that? What do you mean you're not the one?" He said, "I'm not going to be intimidated by you." I told him, "I'm not here to intimidate you at all." I told him, "I'm not even here trying to change your mind about where you stand as far as PCU and the future. I'm literally just here to speak about how you've been speaking about me and my team. And just to let you know, like, yo, some of us have made some mistakes. Some of us may belong to an organization that you don't approve of, but that's not all there is to us. And we have been out here really trying to rectify our mistakes and to make the community a safer place. The same thing that you're doing in your own capacity, in your own space, to the best of your abilities. So we went back and forth a little bit. It wasn't a pleasant conversation at all. You know, we are two different people who have two different outlooks on life. And it's okay to disagree on things. I'm never going to say that somebody has to agree with anything that I feel or think. So as the conversation was going on, he continued to reiterate that he wasn't afraid of me. And I continued to assure him that I'm not here trying to scare you in any way, shape, or form. I told him again that I did not intend to, or I wasn't trying to change his mind about where he stood concerning PCU. And that, again, I was just here trying to show you, like, here, I'm a man, not just a gang member, I'm not just a felon or anything like that. I'm a man, I'm a father, I have a family, people I love, people who love me. At the end of the day, we're all here trying to do the same thing, and that's just make the community a safer place. The decision, that the future of PCU is up to you and the rest of the Board of Commissioners. He said at that point, you're right, because I am the commissioner. And that's when I said, not for long, because you can be voted out of that position. He asked me what I meant by that, actually, after I said not for long. I said, you're an elected official, so you can be voted out of that position. And from there, we went back and forth a little more. I told him, again, you don't have to be afraid of me. Again, I reiterated that I'm not trying to change his mind. I wanted to make that very clear. At that point, I began to tell him, like, you don't have to fear me. I'm a man of God. I'm nobody to fear. He said he's a man of God as well. So I said, good, then we have that in common. So we both fear God. At that point, I told him, God bless and be safe, and I made my way back to the office.
So the way he tells the story was a more menacing version of, you know, just be safe out there, as in, like, be safe out there, like a car might roll up on you.
Right. I've been listening, and it's just like, this isn't like The Sopranos where, you know, I'm the boss and I got somebody just waiting on you outside of work. You better change your mind or something bad's going to happen to you. Like, I don't move like that. Like I said, I'm really a man of God. Like, I just want peace and happiness for everybody. So for him to say those things, it wasn't surprising, but it was surprising that he would go to that extent to put that out there, you know. But at the same time, in my opinion, it kind of fits into the narrative that he's putting out there as part of his campaign.
Can I ask about the physical situation? Like, what was your personal space like?
We were maybe a little bit closer than me and you are now. You know, I wasn't like anywhere like in his face to where he should feel like I was going to hit him or anything like that. You know what I mean? As far as body language goes, you know, my hands might have been moving like this a little bit, because that's just how people kind of move around their hands when they're talking to somewhat. There was nothing in my body language or where I was standing in his space where he should felt like I was trying to threaten him or intimidate him in any way.
Yeah, we're sitting about 5 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So last question about the actual situation was, you know, he suggested that you'd use some profanity. You know, don't effing interrupt me.
Right.
Did you use profanity when you were having this conversation?
I did not. If a curse word slipped out, I don't remember it. But I know for a fact I did not say don't effing interrupt me. That I know for a fact.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you telling your story.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask a little bit more, if you don't mind, about we've heard Commissioner Scalise's version of Port City United, specifically the Mediation Outreach Program, and we've heard a lot of the narrative, as you say, about it.
Right.
What was your experience like working with the Mediation and Outreach Program?
It was great. It was a chance to really come into a government, you know, entity, and, you know, all the resources that are available throughout the city and the county, I was able to learn about those resources and take those resources out to the people that don't necessarily know about them or how to access them. So that was one of the best parts about it. And also, you know, on the mediation side, it was an opportunity for us to save lives. You know, it was a lot of things that went on that usually would lead to somebody getting hurt and somebody subsequently going to jail. And we were able to step in on those situations so nobody ever lost their life or was incarcerated or anything like that.
Did you work at True Colors?
Yes, I did.
So I'd had many conversations with George Taylor and respected what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
Even, you know, I disagreed with some of the the details, but the overall goal of reducing violence, hard to be against that.
Right.
It was always a black box about how it worked when it was at True Colors.
Yeah.
I think that is still kind of the case because people just don't, they don't, they either don't care or they haven't asked the right person. It's my understanding that a lot of this was just social networks, whether online or just through the naturally existing social networks. Like, you know who people are. You know when, say, a dispute on Facebook or TikTok or whatever is gone past jokes.
Right.
Right. Like, there's some things you can say and that's fine. Some things you can't say.
Right.
And that's going to escalate to violence. And then you've got a ticking clock where you got to get to that person or, or multiple people and chill them out.
Yeah.
And it's not that much more complicated. Is that kind of accurate?
That's pretty much it for the most part, you know. Like, and then to add to that, you know, us being from these communities, us, some of us who have lived a certain lifestyle, we have a connection with certain people who are still living that lifestyle to the point where when things happen where it might turn violent, those people might reach out to us and say, hey, I just got into it with such and such, you know what I'm saying? You might need to holler at him so we don't have to go through it anymore, you know what I mean? So it's that thing too, like people reach out, have reached out and told us they was on the brink of going and doing something crazy and we were able to talk them down. And sometimes it's more of like them, when they reach out and say, oh, I'm feeling like I wanna go out and do something crazy, a lot of times it's a cry for help, you know what I'm saying? And we were able to help them out. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's two parts to the mediation and outreach team. After you mediate a situation, you take those two people who you mediated the situation for and you take them out of their situations. And what do you need to get away from whatever it is that's causing you to have these problems? You need a job, you need to move, whatever it is you need to improve your lifestyle so you're not running into whoever you were running into that's going to cause you to commit violence or have violence committed upon you.
I think that's part of this we've heard a lot less about in the community and the public in general is all that follow-up work.
Yeah.
And one of the core arguments of the Cures Violence model and the work Taylor was doing and the reason Judge Corporating sort of suggested this whole idea was that, you know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, psychological and socioeconomic.
Right.
You know, you've got, and it would look the same. I mean, people have racialized this.
Yeah.
Just be it's not candid.
It's where it's poverty. Wherever there's poverty, there's crime.
But you would see this in poor Appalachia.
Yeah.
Right. You would, you know, you would see this in, you know, steel belt towns up in, you know, Pennsylvania and New York where the local industry has collapsed.
Up in those mountains.
Up in those mountains. Yeah. I mean, it's poverty is the number one driver of crime. And that leads to, you know, people having, you know, food insecurity, housing insecurity, one parent might be incarcerated.
Homes, everything, all of that. Yeah.
You know, and that does a number on a kid.
Yeah, it does.
And so unwinding that spring.
Yeah. And that's what PC was about, providing those wraparound services where we could attack these issues from every angle, you know, because it's everything. You know what I'm saying? You fix one issue and then another issue rises up. All right, now we have somebody here to help you with that.
So my last question about that work was, There was always going to be a question of data because
for sure
it's really hard to prove a negative, to show, like, you know, and when say like the murder rate went down or violent assaults went down, PCU is going to take some credit, but law enforcement wants to take some credit,
right?
The church community wants to take some credit, nonprofits want to take some credit, but it's also a matter of like a program like this, at least from what I've heard in Durham and Chicago, it takes some time. It
takes time, yeah.
And so, do you guys feel like you were? How long had you been at PCU?
2 years.
2 years. Do you feel like you guys had like were cooking, or like you needed more time to sort of get to where you needed to go?
I think we were cooking, but we needed more time. I think so. Both of those are right. We were cooking for sure. You know, we were doing a lot, making a lot of progress. You know, those who really are in those areas where crime and violence happens, they know, like, okay, it hasn't been too many shootings. Like, a person hasn't died in so many months and things like that. I remember before PCU started, maybe a year or two before PCU started, I remember 1 year we had like 22 murders or something like that here. So those are things that we see every day, you know what I'm saying? Because we're really out there, so we know what's going on. You know, like to respond to what you were saying about like people taking credit, it takes a village. And that was one of the things that at PCU that we always said, like, we're trying to bring that village back. So, you know, when the crime rate goes down, yes, PCU played a big part in that, but, you know, law enforcement, they did what they had to do as well. The churches, they did what they had to do as well. This organization over here, this organization over there, which is what PCU was all about, uniting the port city, you know what I'm saying? So I would say, like I said, it was just about bringing the village together and really making the village better for all of us.
I don't know if you can speak for any of your former colleagues or your mm-hmm. colleagues at PCU, but you mentioned you were at the 320 Chestnut Building filling mm-hmm. out job applications because just realistically looking at the way the political winds are blowing,
right.
it looks like they will probably cut at least the mediation and outreach program mm-hmm. part of PCU.
Yeah.
How did that impact the people you worked with?
You know, like everybody knows, some of us have been justice impacted, felons. Some of us are gang members or any whatever the case may be. And this is one of the best opportunities a lot of us have ever had, otherwise ever get. Some people in their minds is like, okay, I'm not going to get nothing better than this. When you come into a certain job like the county that's paying the way they're paying, you know, your lifestyle starts to change a little more. You might get a better car or move out of that low-income neighborhood into a middle-class neighborhood or whatever the case may be. These are things that we're thinking about. You know what I'm saying? We got kids, wife, whatever the case may be, a family to take care of. So that in your mind is like, oh, okay, I'm back to survival mode. What I got to do what I got to do to continue to take care of my family. And that's the biggest worry that I've had and I have for my team is that they don't go back to the old things that cause them to go down that wrong path that may have led to incarceration.
If, for whatever reason, the county were to review what happened and said, we made the wrong call,
mm-hmm.
would you go back?
No, not at all.
It doesn't feel right?
No. I have a thing about just being treated unfairly, like, can't treat me a certain way, and then when I'm gone, and then when I decide to leave, and now you realize you messed up, come on back, we'll do better next time. You know, I'm on to bigger and better things now.
Yeah. So what do you hope to do next?
You know, as for now, I'm still looking for more employment because I got to have that guaranteed check coming in until, you know, I can go full time with this business. But that's my biggest thing is I want to get my business rolling. I want to be able to work that full time. I want to be able to give people opportunities. And, you know, I just want to be able to be in control of the money to where I could take the money from my company and do things in the community, as just like PCU is doing, but where I don't have a board of commissioners who's in charge of what I'm doing with the money or how long I can do it.
All right. Well, Anthony, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me. I really do.
Just a note here. After interviewing Brum, we spoke to Commissioner Dane Scalise, who says he still stands by his version of events without reservation. All right. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be speaking with Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of Link, about his experiences with Port City United. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. We're speaking now with Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of Link, a nonprofit that helps people transition from incarceration back into society and become happy, healthy, productive members of our community. Roberts' involvement with Port City United goes back to conversations that predate the creation of the department, and his organization, Link, has also worked with community resource workers provided by PCU. In addition, Roberts, a native Wilmingtonian, can provide something of a long view of some of the issues that sparked the creation of Port City United. All right, my guest now is Frankie Roberts. Sir, thanks for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So we're here to talk about Port City United. And first, I want you to give listeners a little bit of your background with them and your experience with the creation of PCU and what you know about the department.
Okay, so I was going to say I was involved with PCU before it became PCU. Certainly a lot of the conversation about the shooting that took place in Hanover, I think it was late 2021. And so during that time, there was a lot of conversation on, as my son would say, Dad, you got to do something. So it was like community, school, city. County, you got to do something. And so being extremely involved in the community, north side, south side, as I was saying, as a barber, I've always been intricately involved in the community before I became the executive director of Link, which has a youth development component for 16 to 24-year-olds So, yeah, we've been intimately involved. Some of the young men that we have worked with over those years ended up becoming employees of PCU. So, yeah, I would say I was intimately involved right from the inception, even was participated in some of the interviews once it became a program, had extensive conversations. Judge Corpenin, who recommended this model, patterned after Bull City United in Durham, and did a little of my own research as well. And the meetings that took place with the county after they voted to insert $300 million into this program back in 2022 that nobody talks about.
Right. That was after the shooting at New Hanover. There was a joint meeting of the school board and the county commissioners, and Judge Corpening was there. Ben David was there, the district attorney. And Julia Olson-Bozeman, who was the chair of the county commission at the time, basically just called an audible and said, look, we have got $350 million, depending on how you slice it up, in a revenue account from the hospital sale. Chris Coudray, county manager, take this money, do whatever you got to do, and fix this. And we saw from communications at the time that, I mean, to be blunt, unlike other incidents where there have been acts of violence in, black communities or lower income communities, these were emails from more affluent white parents, and they were putting, and no disrespect, they have every right to voice their concerns and put pressure on their elected officials, and they were doing that. And so Julia personally and the commission in general is getting a lot of pressure to do, as you said, you got to do something. So she threw a huge amount of money at this, an almost unregulated blank check. I think the commissioners pulled that back a little bit. But to your point, originally, because there's been a lot of discussion about how this has been funded by COVID money, that's true eventually. But initially, the county was willing to say, we'll spare no expense. Let's do something.
That's correct. And as a native Wilmingtonian living in this community, we have cried about the violence in our community a long time. And not before this happened did anyone say, hey, let's put $100 or $200 million into preventing this from happening. And I believe love transcends color. And I think that if I actively love children and love everyone in the community, my behavior and what I do should align with that. So it shouldn't have taken a shooting where other ethnic groups was in close proximity to create this downdrift or this whirlwind of resources that was poured into this opportunity.
And to your point, several years ago, we interviewed George Taylor Jr., the founder of True Colors, whose violence interruption program and staff by and large became a significant part of Port City United. Yes. George Taylor said the exact same thing on the record, which was that, use a little profane language, but he said this stuff has been going on for a long time. The only difference was this happened in a school with affluent white parents, and the shooting at his son's house, the fatal double homicide, yes, at his son's house, happened in a very nice affluent neighborhood, yes, in the northern part of the county. And so that got people motivated. And again, I'm not criticizing people for using their voice and getting
sure
there.
I think they should. In fact, I like it when affluent neighborhoods jump in the river with a cause, because it appears to add more merit. And for me, it ain't nothing personal. Let's do it together. I think we should always practice that.
Yeah. So another question I want to ask you about, because I think you can articulate this well, is that we have talked a lot in the press and in government about the violence interruption program, which became the mediation and outreach program.
Yes.
There's been a lot less discussion about things like the second chance clinics, the 24-hour helpline, the work that PCU is doing in schools. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, as an organization who had three of the community resource coordinators in the schools where we were, and I'm paraphrasing, they thought that we were one of the biggest assets in the schools. And I saw the outcomes that were positive from the students. The students who had now more mentors to help them navigate school culture, especially if they had a dysfunctional family. Because the CRC's primary role was to provide support not only for that student in the school who was tier three, typically with an IEP, a 504, or a combination, but they was able to provide support to the family, the moms, the dad, the brother, the sister. And so it kind of created a holistic approach for those students. And as a result, they did better in school, behavior improved. They didn't have as many office referrals. And so, yeah, the interrupters, I would say the last 2 years been around 12 or 13 homicides. Now, no one wants to give those violence interrupters that kind of credit, because certainly it take all organizations to heal a community and law enforcement. But nobody wants to give them that. But I have seen individuals' lives change, primarily most of the interrupters. They are making a salary based on what I call the hazard pay they receive. And as a result of getting that salary, now they are taking care of their families. Some of them have brought homes. Now they're able to rent something that's adequate, which is a human right. And I just think, man, it was just, oh, man. Expunctions, certainly we like expunctions because the organization I have the opportunity to lead, Link, is that we work with people with legal histories transitioning from prison to community. And anytime we can get a person's record expunged, man, they can take off because they don't have that barrier called a legal history that's holding them down.
Yeah.
Or John Q. Public like myself could just be a lot more forgiving and we won't have to worry about people's legal history.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of criticism of the county of this, but I think we should give the county credit for, you know, taking that kind of ban the box initiative.
I would say that, oh man, and that was for us, we actually fortunately facilitated that process. We brought a guy named Darrell Atkinson down from Forward Justice to have the conversation with the city and the county. And fortunately, he was able to articulate and provide policies where this has been successful in other communities of banning the box, or we should say delaying the question further in the process. Because sometimes people say, well, you should. I say at a point, the background will get checked, but they delay it once we made the decision to hire the person.
Yeah.
But yeah, the county, in fact, man, the county, in my humble opinion, has been extremely progressive, even with taking this PCU department. That was a progressive move. And that's one reason why I like it. That's why I love the county.
Yeah.
Because they are able to be progressive. And sometimes, you know, you might have to make some modifications. But it's, I just think the PCU, man, was extremely a good program.
So the schoolwork, just to put a cap on that, we've talked a lot about this on WHKR, but we're really talking about kids with ACEs.
That's correct.
You know, kids with adverse childhood experiences.
That's correct.
And this can happen to anyone, but they're concentrated in areas of poverty.
That's correct.
Because of America's nasty racial history.
That's correct.
That means black and brown people. And so a lot of the kids we're seeing at low-performing schools, Title I schools, are dealing with food insecurity, housing insecurity. One parent is incarcerated. There's drug use in and around the house. And none of that is that kid's fault.
That's correct.
And one of the things we've heard from teachers is just how hard they have struggled to deal with this, because you got 20 kids in a classroom on a good day. If one kid is having difficulty emotionally regulating themselves, having someone else who can pull that one kid aside means that he or she doesn't cause a chain reaction in that classroom, which shuts that whole classroom down and you lose a whole day of learning. And so that's the work you're talking about.
That's the work I'm talking about. And we're having this conversation about what they call it, forward facing or front facing teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, the teachers that I know, you know, and I've been in the school several times when all you hear on the intercom, CRC, come to class so-and-so. CRC, come to class. Because of that disruption.
Yeah.
And this program was a community health approach. And so when you take a community health approach, it looks a little different than it would be if you was taking a crime or a violence approach. And so what we have learned now all over the country is that when we look at reentry, when we look at violence on the street, that if we look at it through the lens of community health, it creates pockets and creates what we call, what's the word now I'm learning? The social determinants of health.
Yep.
It creates opportunities for people to be, help navigate some of the nuances of being successful.
You're listening to our conversation with Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of Link. We're talking about Port City United. Now, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we will have more with Roberts talking about the challenges and the future of the work Port City United has been doing. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. We continue now with our conversation with Frankie Roberts, Executive Director of Link. We've been speaking about Port City United. So I want to ask your thoughts on some of the criticisms of the Mediation and Outreach Program, because that's what, even though we've heard the county talking about axing the entire department or their concerns about the department, I think by and large they are probably using that as shorthand for the Mediation and Outreach Program, especially after the arrest of Stephen Barnett and Courtney McNeil, who, as we were talking about off mics, have not been convicted of
That's
anything.
That's correct.
They have been fired, but they have not been convicted. They still should have their day in court. Here's the first criticism I've heard, and that is that many of these violence interruption programs or mediation programs in the Global Cure Violence model are nonprofits. They're community organizations, which means if I'm doing the works of violence interruption and I see on Facebook, for example, a beef, an argument that is escalating pretty rapidly, and I know the people involved and I know that they're armed, there's the potential for violence, maybe there's a history of disagreement. So I go to one or the other, or maybe I and a team member split up and we track down both people. We go to where they are. We try to talk them down. And maybe there's illegal activity happening at that house. Or maybe to calm them down, I say, like, let's have a beer or let's smoke a joint and calm down. Those are some things that you can't do on the clock as a government official. But as just a member of a community organization, you can bend the rules a little bit more because the greater good is preventing a homicide. So if you have a beer on the clock, that's preferable to, you know, a crime scene, a murder scene. So that was one of the first criticisms I heard, was how is this going to work at the government as government employees? Did you see that as being like a insurmountable hurdle, or do you think that was something that they, given time, could deal with?
Yeah, I think it's something given time can deal with. I think the basis is you got to lead with love. And to me, that was at the center of the violence interrupters, being able to interrupt potential conflicts, potential homicides. They was leading with love because they was showing that they gonna let their love supersede anything. And I think that the county, with a little grace, a little mercy, would have to give the program an opportunity to evolve. Because all of the other sites, because I was I was involved early on and had the opportunity to speak with some of the individuals from the global part of the global organization, is that's one of the things that they consistently talked about is, yeah, you got to give the program a chance. And I know when DERM came, and you know their program is embedded in the health department, one of the things that they talked about is with this type of program, people want to see success immediately, but it's going to take at least 3 years for the program to start showing the numbers or the data that people want to see. So, yeah, I think the county could overcome that hurdle. I think this was a special circumstance. That's why I think our county is progressive. that's why in Durham, it has been significant.
Well, I will say it's certainly going to be a culture shock for anyone to go from working in the private sector or the nonprofit sector to the government.
That's correct. And some.
And some, yeah. The other thing was, to your point about, you know, the decreased murder rate, you know, this is something that George Taylor struggled with when he ran True Colors, and I've had a couple of conversations with about him, and he was always quite frustrated, was that if his team prevented a homicide, or he believed his team prevented a homicide, how do you prove that? How do you show it? You don't get any credit for stuff that doesn't happen. And True Colors, again, started in 2017-ish and only had a few years, honestly, up and running, and so it's hard to get a long-term data set. And when numbers did decrease, you know, Donnie Williams, the chief of police, also said, "Hey, we had a role in this. You know, our housing task force, our anti-gang task force with the sheriff's office, churches said, whoa, we had a hand in this." So it was always very complicated to figure out, and you don't want to tell anyone that you didn't have a hand in it, but it was hard for people to sort of dice it up precisely and methodically, like mathematically, who you did 12% of this and you did 17% of this. And in the government, you know, there's a lot of pressure to do that kind of self-analysis. You know, what's the ROI on this program? And that was another thing of moving it from the private sector to the government that I thought they struggled with. So the other question I have is just, you know, the most high-profile thing was that you've had two members of the mediation outreach group arrested. And some people have said, including County Commissioner Dane Scalise, that it is absurd that the county is hiring active gang members. And I've read the comments. I know you shouldn't do that, but I've read the comments on Facebook. And I know that sentiment resonates with a lot of people. So I know you have thoughts on this. I want to hear them.
Well, I think it's absurd as well, but my mentor always say, Frankie, what you see is based on where you sit. So I don't necessarily think that the county's intent was that we're going to employ individuals who are members of a gang and that they will continue to be members who are doing illegal things continuously. I believe that the county's intent, that if a person had been a member, that over time that he would distance himself at least from the illegal activity. In fact, I would say at the time the county hired him that they had articulated that they don't practice or do anything illegal, because that's what created the optimism that the county said, okay, this is a good person. They got some leadership skills. They got the qualifications. They willing to get their community health worker certification. They are willing to be trained, and they are willing to help the community interrupt the vast violence that we've been seeing. And so I don't ever think that anybody want to be reminded of their worst mistake. If individuals come out against the interrupters, I feel like at least first, let me go and embrace that person with a little love before I say anything indifferent. The scripture says if you got an ought with your brother, that you should go to your brother first. And if that don't work, then you bring a witness. And if that don't work, then you bring back a group. But I don't feel like some of our elected officials took that approach, because if I'm seeing something, I want to go and talk with that person and get intimately involved. And then first say, how can I support you? These are some areas I think we can improve and be better. And I don't think I didn't see that. In fact, I saw more. It almost you probably. I don't know if you married or not, Ben.
I'm married, yes.
But, you know, I kind of know the things is going to prick my wife the wrong way.
After it's going to create chaos.
Yes.
I've been married for 18 years, and I'm starting to get a sense of, as I'm saying something, I can.
Yeah,
man,
and I've been
you
married
should not
for
be saying this.
26, yeah. And so I'll be wanting to sometime. I say, now, I know that's going to get under her skin. And sometime I just want to get up under her skin. But I say, Frank, that ain't right. And so if we're looking at harmony, which is what I think our community need, especially as it relates to race and age, right. Because when I looked at PCU and have expressed this several times in meetings. When I rode through downtown and I saw these young men now dressed nice, looking good, and in a different setting, man, that brought tears to my eyes. Because I say, man, downtown is becoming a place for all people. Prior to that, I thought it was relegated to very well-dressed, good-looking men who happened to be white, because that was primarily all I saw when I went downtown. But then when the Port City United moved into 320 Chestnut Street, yeah, man, it did my heart good. And that's because I have three children, two of which are black males, and I have seven grandkids, three of which are young black males, one of which is 21 years old. And yeah, man, it just made me feel good, and I know it made them feel good.
That is one of the things George Taylor talked about, was irrespective of the violence interruption, just recognizing that just because you are from a low-income neighborhood and were a black man in a gang didn't mean that you couldn't be charismatic, didn't mean that you couldn't. In fact, some of these guys had excellent leadership skills. I mean, George really leaned into this, but, you know, sometimes he would say, like, leading a set is no different than, you know, leading a corporation. You got to delegate, you got to manage personalities, you got to deal with stuff. Again, I'm paraphrasing slightly.
Yes.
So, all right. So the last thing I want to ask is, realistically, real politic, it looks like the county will almost definitely cut the mediation and outreach program for now. I mean, nothing is forever, right? We do a different budget every year. But for the foreseeable future, I mean, and it's debatable whether or not they'll cut the whole department or not. But if they don't, what would you like to see the department continue to do or do differently?
that's a tough one. So, well, I would like for them to keep the whole thing personally. What I would like to see done differently is to actually have a conversation, especially with the young men, of some things that I've spoken with a couple of the young men. They see a few things that could be changed, modified, because in any business, you are always looking at quality control. You're always looking at measuring. You can't master what you don't measure. So you're looking at, hey, this is something we're doing. Are we getting the best return on investment? If not, what are some things that we can improve on? So that's always, and I'm sure that the powers to be that was leading that effort, that was what they were doing as an organization at his CRCs. They was always, Frank, where's the data? I didn't see the data in the system. So they was constantly hitting that bell tone. And I think that, yeah, and provide maybe, I know they paid for some mentors for some of the administrators at the time. I think, yeah, just to kind of keep that line of communication open. And if you make a change, don't necessarily think it's a fail. I forget one of the sayings that's one of my favorite sayings. It might be Winston Churchill that says, success is having the ability to move from failure to failure without losing your enthusiasm. And so I think that if you had one or two young men who might have been arrested but not convicted, let's keep that out front. How do we support that individual beyond that? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, he still, at some point, will be back in our community. And we want to make sure that we have enhanced and promoted the relationship and not badgered it, so that it's be like, man, forget this. Because right now, I feel like a lot of the young men and women that work for PCU are almost returning to a thought process of hopelessness because they, you know, I done pulled you out the game, and I'm now you are in limbo. And at the end of the day, they still a community person. They still have a family. And I think it's our responsibility to still provide some triumph and some hope.
I do want to ask this question. It is a sensitive question. It is my sense that, you know, as you discussed, this came together out of the shooting at New Hanover High School. A lot of public pressure, rightfully so, to address the problem. Should there have been pressure earlier? probably. Yes. Yes, there should have been. But we can't change the past. That's what happened. Public pressure, money, but immediacy was part of it.
Sure.
There was a lot of urgency. Something had to be done quickly. And so the county reached out and saw Durham's Bull City United plan and said, this is something we can replicate. Okay. Cedric Harrison, the first director, had been in the media because he had been shot and nearly killed. I mean, miracle that he survived. And, you know, again, charismatic guy, popular in the black community. Okay, there's our director. Now we need staff. They looked over. True Colors was dealing with some financial insolvency. Okay, there's a staff. This came together very quickly. But to be frank, it seemed like this was cobbled together and borrowed from other places. And that saved the county time, but I also feel like the county didn't do the work of getting to know the black community. A criticism I've heard, or you know, a note I've heard, even from the Cures Violence folks, was that they often have a deeper bench. As we were talking about off mics, you know, pastors, basketball coaches, barbers.
Yes.
In addition to, you know, people who had been in the gang life, because you never know what kind of background is going to resonate with a kid or a young man or a young woman. And so that is my question. Do you feel like in the future that is something the county should invest some time in, is maybe doing the harder work of getting to know a broader range of people who could do this work?
Well, I'm going to say it like this. I'm going to say, while it seemed to be cobbled together really quickly, and so I would have to put a checkbox on that to say yes, but I will also say, because I was in those meetings that took place for 6 months, I mean, literally, we was meeting twice a month for 6 months with nonprofits in the room to come up with and get everybody's feedback on how did we get here and then how can we get out. I will say that if I had to do anything different, that I think the county could have led better, was probably putting it out there to the community and doing a mass marketing campaign on what was getting ready to happen. I would say if there was anything that if I could go back and do different, that probably would be one. I was going to also say is I think, and this is probably something that I don't know that we consider, we sped the county up because the county constituents say y'all got to do something and do it fast.
Yeah.
So I think that Even in the school argument, and I got to say this, is when I'm talking about the violence interrupters and kind of the undertone when I'm talking about the violence interrupters, and then when I'm talking about the teachers that need support, we talk about two entities that I believe that are doing good work. We are talking about one different than the other.
Mm.
And again, we talking about one with endearment and love and one with almost despise and decadence. And when I look at that, that is kind of how our community here in Wilmington, I'm a native, has always done business versus being able to transcend, yeah, how I feel about one versus the other. And back to your point, because we got to all share in the success of the violence dropping and sharing that triumph, but also we got to share in the misery together too, and not use the more vulnerable to carry the weight of the negative stuff.
To be the scapegoat.
Yeah, to be the scapegoat. Yeah, we got to kind of get away from that. I see the county that they were kind of, it was pressure on them, just like it's pressure on them now. Hey, we need to make sure that these teachers get paid. We need to make sure the school system survive. So that's the pressure that's kind of driving this narrative.
Yeah.
And I think you can do both and.
Yeah.
But I think in order to do both and, that we got to look at each other as equals. Because when I look at the violence interrupters growing up on Castle Street, as some of the people would say, poor as dirt, I am them and they are me. It is nothing any different than me and the violence interrupters, because I am that young man. I could have been, took a different path if I, you know, didn't have two parents when I was growing up, the sacrifice to send me to Christian school, yeah, man, that would have been me.
Well, those are my questions, and I'm very grateful for your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Frankie Roberts, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my guests for this show, Anthony Brum and Frankie Roberts, and to WHQR's Ken Campbell for technical support. If you missed any part of this program, you can find it at WHQR.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.